Good afternoon, everyone. This is the Special Committee on Small Business Growth, and today is the, I started to read the date that it was posted, it's the 22nd of September, and I'm going to go ahead and call this this meeting to order. We are having an informational meeting today, and we have two topics that we're going to be covering. And the first is one that that Representative Smith and I have been active in for several months now. The two of us participate in the governor's Small Business Advisory Cabinet, and they are winding up their work. And so I wanted to invite Mr. Porter to come forward and outline for us, if you would, the recommendations of the governor's cabinet, and anything that that this committee might have interest in helping the governor's office pursue.
Sure. Thank you, co-chairs Gomberg and Smith. First of all, thank you for participating in the cabinet and members of the committee. My name is Vince Porter, and the governor's policy advisor on jobs and the economy. So just briefly, why the governor asked us to pull this cabinet together. It was really, you know, obviously small business across the state plays such an important role in our overall economy, and her interest was in really understanding and getting some ideas about what things she could move forward that could address and help assist small businesses. Historically, I look through how other governors have approached this, and to no great surprise, almost every governor has had a small business advisory cabinet of some capacity. And the one thing that I noticed was often we had set up a very broad definition of what they should be looking at, and also with no timetable and everything. And so generally, they've all been good conversations, but there was never really an outcome. And so what we try to do with this cabinet is first keep it very contained in terms of time. Governor asked that we would have recommendations from the cabinet presented to us by the fall, so we could actually look to implement them no later than the February the 17 session. But also maybe focus on, narrow the focus. While certainly there are issues that small business faces on a host of areas, we really wanted to focus on three areas. The first one being, what are the challenges with access to capital? What's happening around the state as far as how we mentor our small businesses and entrepreneurs around the state? What's the state's role, and how could we address that in a better way? And then finally, which is probably the biggest issue, is what are the regulatory barriers that small businesses face? So those were the focuses. We started our meetings with on March 18th, and I don't know if I'm the committee consisted, of course, of Co-Chair Gomberg and Co-Chair Smith. From the small business ownership side, we had Jamie Danick from Hum Kombucha out in Bend, Oregon. Mitch Daugherty, who is both an entrepreneur and been in the investment community, but also runs a website that tells stories about small businesses around the state called Built Oregon. He had a lot of experience statewide. Celeste Edmond owns a company, Lunar Logic, in Eugene, Oregon. Kanth Gopalpur is, first of all, our chair of the Business Oregon Commission, and also is an investor entrepreneur that has been involved. Stephen Green is with Albina Bank and also Elevate Capital up in Portland. Rosa Martinez is the owner of a construction company up in Portland and focuses on abatement and other issues around construction. And then finally, Stuart Phillips from Eugene, who was the first company in Oregon that crowdsourced his some investment under the new rules that the state has available. And his company is Red Wagon Creamery. So we did occasionally get some treats from Hum Kombucha and Red Wagon. That was motivation for the meetings. But it was a good, broad discussion. We had a lot of different types of businesses represented, and were able to have a real good substantive conversation. So before I get into the recommendations, the one thing that became evident was it turns out that we've passed laws and looked at these things before. And and none of this is really all that new for anyone, and that maybe the first approach that we should maybe take a look is look at what we've done and see how we can improve on what is already in existence. There are some new ideas and some new things that are being brought forward, but that was something that we wanted to make sure that if we already have laws in place, how are they working and could we do a better job? And that gets to the first one on the access to capital recommendation. The other thing I wanted to say, that our charge to the cabinet was to try and keep the recommendations small enough that we could actually say, okay, here's 8 things we can do in the next year. There may be 30 over time that we need to do, but what are the top 8 that you see? So under Business Oregon, there already is a business loan program called the Oregon Business Development Loan Program. And right now, Business Oregon is trying to take a look at that program. It is a direct loan program for our businesses around the state. Tends to be focused on small businesses already, but there are some restrictions based on the way that the legislation is put forward. First of all, it's traded sector requirements, and it has other certain restrictions about loans and the way that you can structure the product that might have been good ideas when the private sector was not providing even those types of loans. But today, as maybe the markets are changing a little bit, are there other ways? And so one idea that they piloted and the cabinet certainly was interested in maybe going even further on is the idea of a small business expansion loan program. And what this is really intended to be targeting companies. I'll use Red Wagon Creamery, although as an example, that they just got distribution into Fred Meyer. And the first thing that they need to expand their product line is capital. And unfortunately, if you are a successful consumer product company, it's not the easiest thing to go out and get a line of credit that addresses the amount of growth that you maybe need to fill that order from Fred Meyer. So the idea here, and Business Oregon will be submitting a legislative concept for the 17th session, is to provide a little bit more flexibility in the terms, maybe focus on other ways to offset some of the risk and allow them to take on riskier products. So one example, and they are doing this with a couple companies already, is a structure loan that has a royalty attachment to it, so that maybe the company may not be profitable yet, but that with the new orders or whatever their growth that we're projecting over the next 12 months, we're willing to take on some more risk in this loan in exchange for a royalty that would sort of offset that risk. That's not really something that you're going to find in the private sector right now. We certainly have been talking to the banking community, and really the intent is how do we complement what's available in the private sector on that front. So that bill will be presented with Business Oregon, and you know, if this committee's here in 17, it might be a great landing spot to have that conversation. It's an existing program. It's all about just making some changes, so it would not be about new money. There's money in the program available to be using it already. The second one is a little the Oregon Growth Board, which is now also under the supervision of Business Oregon, manages 2 accounts. The Oregon Growth Account, which is statutorily requires that money from the Education Stability Fund to pursue, make investments in funds that would pursue a 12.5% return. And I bring that up because that instruction, and it's a very smart and wise thing to do for that account, restricts what types of money of funds can apply and pursue a 12.5% return in today's world. So in addition, I'm not sure, maybe 4 years ago, the Oregon Growth Fund was created and had been funded out of lottery dollars, which was intended to sort of flip this idea of returns are important. We want to invest in funds that are going to deliver a return to recycle this capital, but having that 12.5% goal restricts us from maybe going to an agricultural company in Eastern Oregon, or if someone wanted to create a food-based fund focused on food companies in Oregon, those are not going to fit into growth account scenarios. So that The challenge with the Oregon Growth Fund to date is we have not been successful in finding a substantial source of money to make this fund, to be quite honest, relevant. And going after lottery funds for this is probably also going to be a challenge moving forward as well. So really the charge was to go out and find a more permanent and more robust source that would focus on economic development in Oregon as the priority and returns as the secondary factor. So that's the last one. Finally, on the access to capital is just really asking that Business Oregon take a deep look at how, I will say, we learn constantly with the SBDCs and also even our stuff within the state. There are lots of opportunities for small business. We always ask the question, are they as well coordinated as they should be? Are they leveraging each other's resources as should be? And even within the agency, to be quite honest, are they talking to each other to have a coordinated strategy? So we are asking in this recommendation that the Business Oregon take a good hard look and make sure that they're structured in a way that they are maximizing and leveraging the assets that they do have. Mentorship, which is also very connected in a lot of ways to the capital, because I think one thing that was made, a point that was made clear in our discussions was it's great to have good access to capital tools, but without the proper mentorship network in our state for our small businesses, we run the risk of possibly seeing that capital going down a rabbit hole. So the recommendations on this front was, first of all, supporting a statewide initiative that focuses on locally driven strategies to increase access. And the most important point here, I think, that university is, again, leveraging what we have, whether it's a really strong SBDC network in regions. And a lot of the discussion here was focused on rural Oregon. Just this year, the governor used some of her strategic reserve fund money to fund $250,000 for a challenge grant, essentially, for concepts around promoting rural entrepreneurship around the state. And really it was focused on leveraging partners in the regions, and the four places that were selected on this in Klamath Falls, there's a new project being set up there that is leveraging some of, I believe USDA's involved in some of the local communities. Coos Bay is working on a food entrepreneurship hub right in downtown Coos Bay. There's already some good, strong coordination happening in Baker City and LeGrand. So those were the four, but that was really intended to be a pilot. And this recommendation is to look deeper and maybe see how you could have even more coordinated and go a little bit larger in really getting into some of the regions that could use this support. Number two, again, we have a lot of players in this space. We have no real single point where people can go to and understand what's available to them. So the discussion here was around building a single point of contact, a digital website that allows small businesses to know, where do I go if I'm interested in loans, or where do I need to get a business plan? What are my options? And so everyone suggested just even having something as simple as a coordinated website that could address where you're located in the state of Oregon, what your needs are, and can get some answers quickly. Now, it's really important that number two and number three are connected, because what everyone agreed was it's nice to have a website, but without having face-to-face and personal contact, that website will get stale and maybe not as productive. So the second part of that piece is then also following up with I think we're suggesting a quarterly roadshow where we would really try and bring all the different service providers and go regularly around the state and bring businesses to the, and this would include the private sector, you know, banks, Business Oregon, the SBDCs, even USDA, wherever the applicable places, to provide then connect them to people that are interested in what services are out there to help small businesses grow around the state. So that was mentorship. And I'll go into regulatory barriers. One issue on this is a lot of the regulatory issues that we are that we heard are local. You know, a lot of permits and a lot of licensing is handled at the local level, at the, either at the county or the city level, and that there is some challenges with what the state's role is in those. But there is one that stands up at the top that we didn't even, to be honest, when we all heard about this, we were surprised, which is there is a law in place, ORS 185-335, that requires all state agencies to provide a fiscal impact statement on any rulemaking that they make and explain how that rule will impact small business. We don't know, and I'll be honest with you, we don't know how agencies are addressing this on a wide scale. So the first request that the cabinet has, well, maybe we should get a report from all the agencies and really understand how they're doing, how they're addressing, how they define small business impact. And I know Representative Gomberg has some particular, if he wants to chime in, but issues. But so we will be asking for that report. And our goal is, if there's some need to address this law in a better way, we certainly would encourage and pass on to a committee like this in 17 to maybe take a look about making sure that agencies, as they're making rules, are factoring the impact of small business. The one piece of this that I think I'm not sure I have the answer for on it is also understanding who is speaking for small business in that issue, because we know that there are organizations out that are we know where to go if we want to ask. I'm trying to think of the hospital association or whatever, but the small business association in the state of Oregon, that can get a little murky. But still having this in place, recognizing that the law exists and making sure that we're getting everyone to adhere to that is something we think is very important. One very simple idea that came forward, and everyone emphatically liked the idea, was just very simply, no matter where, whatever point of contact that a small business comes into the state, having a button on every agency's web homepage that links them to the one place that they should always have as a resource to go if they have questions, and that's the Office of Small Business Assistance. So someone, we were talking about how do we gather those who are coming at the state at different points, and someone just suggested something very simple, is let's just have a link to a website on every homepage. I don't know how our IT people will respond to this, but everyone really liked this idea, including the governor, so we will be following up with that. Number three, and this is really about customer service. The idea here is to develop a pilot program. Actually, Pat Allen from DCBS threw this out to me as an idea, and everyone really loved it. But we know that sometimes we hear, especially from small business, the length of time that it takes for licenses or permits that to happen, and for whatever reasons that exist. But develop a timeline with agencies on their permits or licenses, and really hold them to that timeline, that when they have received a complete application, that they have a period of time to process that application. And if they don't, they're required to refund the fee. I think everyone agreed that, as opposed to going completely open on that, is to really work with maybe do a pilot and see how that would work and how we could implement that further. So this is something we'll be taking a look at and figuring out. I don't know if it requires legislation or if we could just test it and make it an executive order or whatever, but the idea of some sort of money-back guarantee on the length of time for permits and processing we thought was a very good one. One that has come up, and that I know the governor is particularly interested in, is COBID, which is formerly WebSBI, which is the certification of minority and women-owned businesses. We've heard lots of feedback about the timing of this. I think there's actually been some improvement with this group. Unfortunately, they can't fit because their application is free, but we have asked Business Oregon to look at other ways where we can ensure timely responsiveness. Again, Representative Gomberg suggested this about forms and the fact that are we looking at forms that have maybe been developed over time? They maybe get more and more complicated. But are we doing everything we can to be as simple, make them as simple and easy for businesses? Are there ways, and this is not an easy answer, but are there ways to streamline them cross-agency that if one business submits a form that they don't have to go through? And really the conversation here is the larger you are, the more likely you are to have one designated person to just, that's their job, is filling out permits or forms or whatever that the state requires. The smaller you are, the more likely that the business owner is going to be required to do that. So really asking everyone to take a review and maybe submit a report on and discuss how we can do a better job of streamlining that paperwork. Last thing, and then I'll open up for questions, that we, under Governor Brown, she's always very interested in promotion of minority and women-owned businesses, particularly in the procurement side here in the state of Oregon. One thing that is a challenge for us that we think that there's room for improvement is, first of all, consistent data on how agencies are taking the issue around securing procuring contracts with minority women-owned businesses and emerging businesses as well. And how do we make that data consistent so that we can know how we're doing over time, you know, not just from one agency to another, but consistently as a state as a whole. So I will be working with Serena Sotomayor on this issue and really trying to push forward with the agencies some sort of consistent metrics so that whatever data that they're reporting, it's the same, and that we would then be able to have a more accurate measurement of how we're doing in this field. So thank you. I'm certainly happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Porter. And I appreciate that you've broken this out into three areas that this committee has discussed in great detail over the last several months as well, and that is regulatory reform, capital acquisition, and mentorship or support. Since I think we'll have a number of questions, why don't we take them category by category so we can kind of focus the conversation. And I'll remind everybody that we do have a printed copy of the recommendations here at the table as well. I wanted to start with regulatory reform. And I must say, Mr. Porter, I am fascinated by ORS 185. I think I described it in our last meeting as a measure that nobody remembers passing and nobody's talked about very much ever since. And you indicated to us that you were planning to survey agencies to see how they were addressing 185. Might I ask, in addition to agencies, are you planning to survey other branches of state government, the Treasurer's Office and BOLI or the Secretary of State's Office on 185 as well?
Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, we didn't write it out that way, but I think it's appropriate that we at least make that request. I am unclear on separation of powers here, what obligation they have to submit that report to me, but that's a great point, and I know it's come up in our conversations, and we will follow up on that for sure.
Well, the context of my question, of course, is we've got rulemaking underway right now on sick leave that's going on through BOLI. We've got rulemaking underway on retirement savings going on in the Treasurer's Office. And, of course, we've got rulemaking going on all over the place in the Executive Department. I just might mention a question that has plagued this committee from day one is what constitutes a small business. The definitions in 185 are businesses with 50 or fewer employees. I thought I might mention that. Are there other questions about regulatory reform? Any questions in that subject area? Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. It's actually not on regulatory reform, but just kind of as a kickoff statement. Really, really want to send my gratitude to the governor for her convening of this group. I thought the committee was extraordinarily productive. I thought it was fabulous that she took the time out of her schedule, her busy schedule, to participate personally in those meetings, and there really was an environment of open discussion where all ideas were listened to and heard. So I hope you'll convey my gratitude to the governor for that. And then, Vince, I want you to know how much I appreciate your leadership in that committee. You heard a lot of crazy ideas, some good, some bad, but nonetheless, you did a great job in bringing us all together. I hope the committee will take these recommendations seriously. These came from business owners throughout the state of Oregon who understand Oregon's business and climate. They understand how to hire and fire that employee. They understand the real issues that business owners are dealing with. And so these are recommendations that came from Main Street type businesses. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Kusha. I just would want to say it was important at every meeting the full cabinet, the governor did attend and was participating at the head of the table, and that was something that we thought was really important if we were going to do this, that she'd be in there and listen. Also, and I failed to mention, while we did intentionally restrict to this scope, one issue that came up that was noted in their memo, it was important to Rosa Martinez in particular, is the issue around workforce. And that probably is an issue for all businesses today, but for her in particular, and everyone really chimed in on making sure that we're thinking about workforce challenges to small business. And so actually there's some interest that the governor has of like how we continue to look at small business growth, and do we continue this cabinet or reframe it and focus on other things. But I think workforce will be one that we will talk about.
Excellent. Mr. Chair, Representative.
So I'd like to just follow up a little more on this ORS 185. It just gives me enough information to not even know what the devil's going on here. But so the question goes back to, do we have some concept? It's nice that we're asking for this kind of a follow-up on what's happening, but I'm trying to understand the premise behind it to begin with. I mean, so was the information to be developed that we would use the information for something? Was the information just to be kept by the departments that they would find? I'm trying to understand what value ultimately, what was the expected value from the
Chairs, Gomberg Smith and Representative Lively. I think that we wanted to first hear how the agencies are addressing this law and identify if there are gaps or compliance. Maybe there's no consistent guidelines on what it means to reflect on how you address the impact of small business, or what's the process of how you even engage with small businesses to understand the impact. So really first getting that and I hope we can do it fairly quickly, so that if there is some clarity that we need to act on something, that it would be available to you to consider.
Okay. Is that a question, Representative?
Yes, I did.
Please.
A couple things. One is, this is kind of like deja vu for me. I've been on business and labor for 10, 12 years, something like that. We've hashed this field before. We've plowed it several times, especially the part about the time frame of permit process. We've really gone into that in the past, and evidently what our work was either shelved or not adhered to. I'm not sure. The other thing is that on permit and licenses, I thought we were going to go into the point of where we could do online application, get it done rapidly, and wouldn't have to worry about a time frame. It'd be up to the individual. The other thing, when we talk about jobs, I would like to see, in fact, there's my cohort. He and I have been on business and labor forever and 6 months, I think, together, Representative Holvey. But when we talk about $250,000 here, $250,000 there to do this and this and this, what is our payback? In other words, what jobs are they going to create, and what's going to be the payback to the state of Oregon in revenue, and how many years would that take? I think those are important. Those are important factors to me as a person that's been in business, because that I understand. You know, I get that part. But I don't get the part that we're going to create 15 jobs at $250,000, because you start doing that and you're going, wait a minute, that isn't very good. Or 20 jobs.
Co-chairs and Representative Esquivel, first to the deja vu comment, I would echo that. I mean, I think there's absolutely some truth to it. On your digital online concept around, that's really something we want to be a part of the review of the forms and everything. But you're absolutely right, and I hope I did adequately explain that we are not trying to present anything that is new here. Maybe I think what is important, though, is that we remain vigilant and have constant attention about how we can continue to do these things and do them better. On the metrics, that also is something I think is a very valid point, and it's something we talked about relating to coordinating of resources. And the goal, especially on the mentorship side, was and on the access to capital side, is where are the gaps that we hear over and over again that are not being addressed in the state, and the question is, if we are find a way efficiently to fill those gaps, whether it is financial products that are not available in the private sector but needed by our small businesses, how can we look at that? That's where the business expansion loan program, I think, is a good fit there. But on the regional hubs, I don't quite honestly know yet if we can give you an answer. We are going to create X number of jobs with this investment. But I think what our goal here is to, first of all, find ways to bring partnerships together so that there's a better service out there for entrepreneurs that have maybe not necessarily right at their fingertips access to the knowledge or I'm not sure if I don't want to be dismissive of any entrepreneur, but if someone has a great idea, do they already know then how to take that great idea into a 50-person company, or do they need the SBDCs or other groups locally? And again, we will not be interested in a state-run program on this. This is really about leveraging existing programs. So I think the metrics piece, and also making sure that we are not spending $250,000 and funding 100% of one program. It's really about plussing up and adding resources to what is out there that's doing well. I hope that is some answer for you.
Representative Hack.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Thank you, first of all, for all the work that you've done. You brought up workforce, and all of the industry and business we've talked to so far and listened to on this committee, that's been a resounding issue across the board. Is there a reason why that wasn't a recommendation? And since it wasn't, what is the plan? Obviously you had some conversation about that. Is there further information that the cabinet can provide us outside of these recommendations that talk to us about how we address workforce across our state? Because it didn't matter what industry it was, that's been an issue. So I'm just surprised why that wasn't one of the recommendations.
Co-chairs and Representative Hack, initially the thought was, let's focus on what we think is unique to small business. And, you know, to be quite honest, Business Oregon did a survey in 2014 with 500 businesses around the state with no size differentiation, and workforce, various degrees of workforce became the largest issue. We didn't put it in this particular cabinet because, maybe it was a mistake, I don't know, but because I looked at workforce as relating to all businesses, and we were focused on something uniquely to small business. The governor is interested in maybe changing and maybe looking at that differently, and maybe that, and I don't have an answer because our final meeting was just yesterday, but if moving forward we do a specific workforce issue, that's something that's on the table for sure. But there is conversations and efforts around workforce, no matter what size of business you are, happening right now. Alana Pertle-Guinea in our office covers that, and I know she's already working on that, and it might be relevant for her to come forward and talk about that.
Well, and I appreciate that. And I guess there's definitely some concern with, you know, on my thoughts looking at the recommendation, simply because small business, that makes up 80%. And if we're not looking at the number one problem that they face through this cabinet and through this committee, where are we going to do that work? So I appreciate your answer, and I hope that continues to be on the forefront and that we begin to address that issue. Thank you.
Fair. Thank you, Representative. Mr. Co-Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. In answer to Representative Hack, in no way do I speak for the governor, but I did hear her comment that she recognized that this was an important issue for Oregon. She wanted to keep the committee kind of specialized in its focus, and if I heard her correctly, she did share that this was an issue that she was going to be looking at, and like you shared, Vince, if we needed to redirect this cabinet or call for a new cabinet, she was very open to that. I mean, I think she heard the message loud and clear.
Yeah, and I'm not as, Alana does our workforce, but there's already a workforce strategy happening in the employment department that's focused on sectors and engagement of industry. One thing that maybe could be looked at, to your point, is are we engaging both big and small in those conversations? And I'm sure that will be something that will come out that came up in this cabinet that should be reflected in that work as well. So, yeah.
Committee, we're jumping around a little bit, and that's perfectly fine. I'm going to ask a question on the mentorship page. One of the recommendations talks about a single point of contact. And so often in this committee, we've heard that there are resources available, there are programs available that people don't know about. In particular, I think we talked about SBDCs who receive funding but can't use any of that for marketing. Mm-hmm. So they're precluded from talking about the good work they do and encouraging people to take advantage of it. We create a one-stop shop. How do we let people know it's there?
Right. And Co-Chair Gomberg, I think everyone agreed with that. I think the challenge is that sometimes we make mistakes of just creating a website and then no follow-up, and then it gets stale. Maybe it's not current information. So it's going to need to be a mix of both, like having an online portal that people can get to and reference that is quick, but then also making sure that we're following that. First of all, keeping that website or whatever the right hub is, keeping it current. Keeping it topical and relevant to whatever and then secondly, you know, it's still, we don't have that human point of contact. I think that there are resources to do the human point of contact out there, and just putting a little more effort into that so that we have both those two things working together.
Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it wouldn't be very difficult for us to go with the social media we have today to tap in on that and have pop-ups when people are on their Facebook or they're on their LinkedIn or whatever they're on, and have that available, and it's not that costly. So I wouldn't think. Maybe I'm wrong.
No,
I don't think it's that costly. We're starting a new business, go to da-da-da-da-da. You know, get their attention that way.
Co-Chair and Representative, I think you're absolutely right. I think one of the things that maybe we haven't done is that there could be 10 resources for them, and having one place where and someone used this example of, like, you might go to an SBDC because that you heard word of mouth that that's the place to go, and they don't necessarily have the programs. There's no current setup that is a good reference back to all the other resources that have to happen. So figuring out how to do that through social media or website or a combination of the two is something that we heard loud and clear, and figuring out how to do that.
Yes, Representative Leininger.
Thank you. I wanted to congratulate the Governor's Cabinet on Small Business Growth members and Mr. Porter on presenting a really exciting set of recommendations. There are two things in particular that I think are great, and it's not clear to me the right sequence for presenting my comments, so it sounded like maybe I could just jump in. And
please do.
I think the idea of having some integrators, the hubs that you have, I guess your innovation department in Business Oregon that you're deploying in a few different parts of the mm-hmm. state that are not downtown Portland, mm-hmm. Is a great idea, because I think, you know, by enabling people to not feel like they have to go hub and spoke to somehow downtown Portland for all their small business needs is better customer service. And I like the whole attitude about great customer service that seems to pervade this document. You know, here's government trying to be good at responsive customer service to our customers, small business people in the state. So I think that part is great. And I'm also really intrigued by the idea of the Oregon Growth Fund being interested in playing a slightly more daring approach in helping small business get the kinds of capital they need to grow to the next level. And I think the idea of trying to help it get capitalized to a point where it can be even more relevant, as you said, than in the kind of pilot demonstration phase that it's been in right now, could offer some good rewards. You know, as someone, as a Democrat who cares a lot about meeting people's basic needs around the state, I think we do that in a few different ways, but one of the key and honorable ways that we do it is by helping people launch and operate their own businesses so that they can provide for them, their own families. And so I like this as one of our bold strategies for trying to help Oregonians be more, thrive more by helping more people have businesses that are really robust and successful. So thanks.
Thank you. And co-chairs and Representative Leininger, on the growth fund, and I think, I hope I've made it, we do not want these recommendations to be, some of these to be competing with what private sector has already offered. If we're going to do the business loan development, we should make sure that this is a product that is not something where a bank can do it and maybe do it better. Same thing on the growth fund is we want to look at where the gaps are. We've heard from outdoor and athletic companies around the state that they don't get the looks that, you know, the attractive software companies have in terms of venture capital. Food companies also, they're not looked at as, but what they really need is like a good, solid loan program or something. Craft 3 is an example of a company that's done this actually really well up in Washington. And the other piece of that is like this also shouldn't be 100% on the backs of this, is how do we leverage these kinds of resources into something like that a fund would bring additional capital to the table. So those are some of the criteria that we would want to see as a part of it. But we think having an established and robust fund there, we could do some really good things.
Representative Lively.
So I want to just speak a little bit about the single point of contact, since it's easy to talk about and say it's a great idea, and I can tell you locally we worked on it for 30 years just to do local single point of contact. But the difficulty is, first, and Vince mentioned this, about keeping it current, because there's a lot of information in the players and that changes a lot, and so nothing can be more frustrated as they finally get there and the information's not. But secondly, it's just all the integration locally. So most of the small businesses I've worked with years would not think the state's the first place to go to start getting information, because they're small businesses in that, so they think more locally. And so I think this is a great idea in that, but it goes back to, so how are we going to make that resource available so that the person in that small business is trying to get there doesn't get frustrated in trying to find the single point of contact so it doesn't do it. And I don't, from my standpoint, don't believe that single point ends up being at a state place they would contact. It'd be someplace else. And so all these are great ideas. There's an enormous amount of local resources that has to be tied in if it's a single point of contact. But my concern becomes simply then, what is it that the local businesses don't think about to go there in the first place to get that information versus the fact that it's there? Because I don't think most local businesses think the state's the place what necessarily would provide that.
Co-chairs and representatives, I think it's a great point, and I failed to mention, we didn't discuss it too much in the cabinet, but you know, really looking at the foundations around our state, the Ford Family Foundation, Meyer Memorial Trust, are looking at some of these same issues, and it might be that in fact the state may not be the right place to host that single point of contact website, but maybe a partner. At the end of the year, Meyer Memorial Oregon Community Foundation and others will be presenting the Oregon Capital Scan report, which also might be really informative. There's one out from 2 years ago. They'll be sending a new one, I believe, in January. I guess I just want to acknowledge the point that, yeah, the state may not be the best on all of these. It may be that we play a secondary role or support what is something that a foundation could do better.
Sure. Thanks.
Co-chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-chair. I guess you and I've been kind of immersed in these issues, so some of these conversations we're having today, we've had over the last couple of weeks. One of the concepts I think Co-chair Gomberg and I are going to be bringing forward is the allowance of SBDCs to actually use a portion of their budget for marketing Right now, that's actually a prohibited use. Right. And so you've got this great resource out there that can't go tell its story or reach out to folks. And so I think this committee, in partnership with the cabinet, is going to be having that conversation. So
excellent. Representative Esco.
I think that goes back, Representative, to it's hard to sell a secret.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Any wrap-up questions for Mr. Porter? Well, Mr. Porter, thank you for coming to join us today. I know I speak for my co-chair and I believe for the entire committee when I want to say thank you to the governor and to the members of the cabinet for their good work here. And we recognize how many hours went into these conversations and these recommendations, and it may well be that this stuff has been talked about before, but it hasn't been talked about by us, and it hasn't been talked about now.
Yeah, but I'm so old, I'm getting the words becoming. I've seen this movie before.
Yeah, and Representative Esquivel worked on it so long ago, he doesn't remember. So, we appreciate this good work, and we're going to be looking forward to the opportunity to review some of these in measure form.
Great.
When we return here in February. So please convey our gratitude to the governor and to the members of the cabinet.
Thank you.
And we'll go ahead and excuse you. And Representative Holvey has been waiting patiently to talk to us about his work group on youth in the workforce. Representative Holvey, welcome to the Special Committee on Small Business Growth.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Smith, for inviting me here. Happy to be here. I kind of wanted to weigh in on some of that last conversation, to tell you the truth. And maybe I'll piece some of that in my presentation on this specific topic that you've called me here for. And maybe you can return the favor to my committee. And report to my committee in the future. So,
well, actually, Representative Smith wants to take care of that.
I've served on his committee. He's a good chair, so I'm cool with that.
Well, thank you. For the record, Paul Holvey, State Representative, District 8, out of South Central Lane County in South Eugene. I guess you all know last session that we engaged in a topic about minimum wages. And in the process of that, you know, the youth employment became, you know, a conversation. And we started looking into ramifications to youth employment, youth unemployment, participation, and decided that we needed to have an interim conversation specifically about this. And with Jan Nordland at our side, Senator Dimbro and I, and several other representatives also came and went, had this conversation. It was we had two work groups. One was on a different topic. It wasn't largely participated by business, and then the youth employment wasn't largely participated by labor. So it was kind of an odd scenario for us that I wasn't really expecting. But regardless, we did go through a tremendous amount of information and data gathering about the status of youth. We looked at a lot about the demographics of youth and what they do, and over the years their participation perhaps has gone down, unemployment's become a bigger issue. And we also looked at the relationship of the wages in relationship to that. And we had Nick Belichick from the Oregon Employment Department go over and do a lot of research for us, and did I don't know how many reports to our committee, at least two anyway, maybe three, and attended many most of our meetings. So it was good to have that, you know, really looking for data, you know, to support whatever kind of action we might take. We also had a lot of program nonprofits and agency programs that are dealing with youth employment come and speak to us about their programs, their challenges, and it was the results of all of that were sort of surprising to me, actually, something I wasn't really expecting. We didn't really find any data or correlation that a subminimum wage, for example, would actually improve youth employment. As a matter of fact, there was no data that supported that across the country that we could find. And as our conversation around that particular topic grew and grew and grew, it became actually less and less engaged in our conversations. And in fact, many of the business folks that were in the room, including the Farm Bureau, said, you know, I don't think our industry will really use a subminimum wage. We are struggling to get people to work at even higher wages. And, you know, that was a little bit alarming to a lot of us, because that wasn't what we were expecting to hear. And we also heard from the Oregon Employment Department, one of the issues with youth employment was really a sign of our times, perhaps, and demographics of people retiring but really not having enough to make ends meet. And they are competing in that workforce where youth traditionally held most of the jobs. And so, you know, there's competition now for those lower wage jobs where traditionally we would expect youth to be having the predominant amount of that work. And, you know, employers say, I need somebody with more experience. If I can get somebody with more experience, that's who I'm going to hire for the same price. And so that was also another driving factor. We did, you know, after hearing a lot about this, you know, we did look at a lot of the work experience programs and starting to listen to those and trying to figure out which ones are better than the other ones. And that's a really subjective test, of course. But we also kind of looked at some of their roadblocks. And, you know, we looked at, I mean, I was sort of shocked with some of the information I found out. I was, you know, we have a lot of programs for youth. And a lot of times, and workforce issues, and I'll weigh in on workforce in a minute. And sometimes those funds for those programs are so restrictive that there's almost like gaps in your ability to serve the infrastructure of providing jobs and getting youth into the workplace. And so that became an issue as well. And later in the process, you know, we started focusing on, geez, we need to figure out how to better invest in some of these programs, how to make these programs better, and really listen to the experts that are in the field on this. And so that, I think that's coming out of our work group, going to be one of our initiatives is how to, you know, beef up some of our investments in those programs. Because as you know, our demographics, and I relate to Representative Esquivel a little bit here, you know, it seems like we've been around talking about this for so long. It sort of is a deja vu, and we keep getting older, and the youth still aren't getting into that workforce.
Mr. Chair, he's not speaking for me about getting older.
duly noted.
So it is something that, you know, we see as a real challenge, and not just a challenge, but an extremely important one for the future of our economy and the future of business and you know, the quality of our workforce. If we don't start engaging youth to get participate in this economy, it's really alarming. So, and later in that program, we also, believe it or not, odd for our committee to consider the idea of tax credits. It's normally not a purview that we engage in too much. And but I think coming out of this, we will be probably drafting legislation to be referred to the Revenue Committee to consider. It's sort of a new idea. I admit I've got some reservations about it, a little bit. I'm not sure about the ramifications. It needs to be explored, but it's sort of a brand new idea, as Chris Olenek told us, because he also participated in many of our meetings. So Anthony, sitting back here from NFIB, came up with the idea of having a tax credit on the withholding of income tax. Not on income tax, but on the withholding. And that concept, I'm really going, oh man, how's Department of Revenue going to figure out how to, you know, manage that? That's one of my big concerns. But regardless of that, you know, it has business is very interested in that concept because unlike a regular income tax credit, that they have to wait to actually be able to apply it, this would prevent the money going out right away, and so those dollars stay on the balance sheet of the business because they wouldn't be sending it in on that withholding.
Interesting.
A very interesting idea. I mean, I was going, oh, no way, but the more we talked about it, we feel like it's a new enough idea. We don't totally understand it that we think it should be explored. And so that's sort of where we are leaving it. We've asked Legislative Revenue Office, Chris Olenok, to start working up some numbers on this, if we give him some hypothetical numbers and percentages to get going on. And so that will be an unusual outcome of this work group, actually, that from my perspective. Beyond that, we also have Senator Dimbro and I also are engaged with the State Workforce Investment Board, and so we are working also to tie better together our local workforce investment boards with state policy, state goals, and seeing what we can do in the investment arena to further their work on helping youth get into the workplace and exposing youth to industries and sectors that they choose. That's not a new idea, obviously. I'm sure you've all heard that before, and we've done a lot of work around CTE and STEM hubs. And one of the presentations that we had at the, let me step back, the State Workforce Investment Board, I don't know if you all know, but it operates to set state policy on the workforce and trying to lay out the framework for all the local workforce investment boards across the state. And they've gone through a tremendous amount of work over the last couple of years as the new WIOA Act has come into play. It required states to do a whole series of planning and sector strategies. And so each of our individual workforce investment boards, your workforce investment boards around the state, are going through this process and identifying the sectors in their particular locales where they think they should focus their attention, especially on workforce issues. And so, I'm pretty excited about this renovation in the Workforce Investment Board. It's pretty, you know, usually boring stuff, but I really see a sort of a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel because we're starting to focus on some successes. And work systems up in Portland having some real innovative programs, and also the one here in Salem also does a tremendous amount of great work. And I'm not going to brag too much about Lane County, but they're also pretty engaged. And I'm not familiar with all of them around the state, but those that have presented to us, I have a little more knowledge of. So one of the things that came out of this recently, out of the last Workforce Investment Board meeting that we brought into this work group, is a program that's called Oregon Connections, I believe. And they just presented this morning, actually, in Senator Dimbro's committee. And its idea is similar to this one-stop shopping sort of idea you were just talking about. But is specifically geared towards youth and youth employment and providing opportunities, apprenticeships, internships, and just exposure, if nothing else. And the idea of this is really a portal. I think of it not as a program, but this is infrastructure that can be utilized by the workforce investment boards around the state to exchange information and and opportunities for youth with local business. So you will have education accessing this portal, and also your local businesses accessing this portal to create this space where they can work on ideas to bring youth to the business sector. It doesn't sound like a any sort of huge revelation, but the logistics of getting all of that done through and actually working with our STEM hubs directly to make that happen. And the idea that seems so like such a simple idea, what's the big deal, is that right now it's total frustration on the side of education and on the side of business in trying to engage in those sorts of conversations. Business get flooded with requests to come visit their company, do this, can you do this for us, can you do that, and it's not coordinated, it's not very well organized in that way. And so this is really an intriguing idea. I think would be a great investment for the state to really help that information portal to move forward to serve the whole state. Because right now it's sort of in a pilot, I believe, in pretty much the Portland area. So that's one piece that we are also looking at perhaps having legislation. And I know the Ways and Means people hate it when we do policy bills that say, hey, spend some money over here, but we have to introduce these concepts to our Ways and Means colleagues somehow. And
we're just cheap. That's all it is.
No offense. No. I mean, we're all busy people. So it is something that I think that would be extremely helpful to this endeavor in getting to these programs, because it sort of alarms me when I hear we have a lot of monies, a lot of programs that have earmarked money in programs as well, the WIOA money, as it's now called. Since they changed the act, a lot of those youth dollars are really restricted to at-risk youth, for example, and those are great programs, don't get me wrong, and they need that attention. But it sort of leaves this gap for, what's the rest of youth do? And these programs that get designed to serve these youth really don't have the ability to do anything else. And so we need to be thinking about those sorts of funds that would enable some flexibility in their programs to expand and grow, instead of having restricted dollars all the time for a specific use, because sometimes they have little simple things that they could do, like this portal, for example, that they don't have any allocation or dollars that they can use to do that. So it is, and that's, I think, something we also discovered, is that there's a lack of coordination of bringing all these dollars in from all these different sources to cobble together a program, and that's what they all do, whether it's nonprofit dollars and federal dollars and state dollars, and generally they all have some sort of strings attached, and so they really get glassy-eyed when you start talking about unrestricted dollars that are geared towards youth, and the local workforce investment board could then decide how to deploy those dollars in their region to accomplish their strategies around their sectors and their workforce needs. So those are kind of a quick little snippet of that of what we've gone through. It's been an interesting work group, interesting exercise, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to actually get some meat on the bone on some of these programs. It just shocks me to think that Northwest Youth Corps, for example, and Representative Lively's district, I believe, or maybe it's Bill Barnhart's, I'm not sure, is a program for youth around this, actually around the whole Northwest and even into California, and they turn away thousands of students for summer work, thousands, because they don't have the capacity to take them all on. And these are programs not that the kids apply to get into. And they get paid during the summer, and they get hands-on experience. They do a lot of work with our watersheds, and with National Forest, with city parks, you know, just all sorts. And they do a lot of stream habitation. They do biology, sampling, and just across the gamut, really neat program. And it just is sad that they have to turn away that many kids, and so we need to fix things like that. And I don't know any other way to do it except to infuse some investment into sort of those things. It's sort of like the credit enhancement fund. I don't know if you talked about that in the last presentation. Oh, shoot. But I mean, it's like gap financing, for business, that it's a program. I'm surprised you didn't talk about it. It was one of my favorites. It is something we have to look at, those gaps, because if we just address at-risk youth and the rest of youth don't have anything to do, they're going to become at-risk youth, in my way of thinking.
That's right. So true.
And so, it's sort of like preventative investment in a way. But I don't want to take away from those at-risk youth programs. Don't get me wrong. They're extremely important. So we came out with this tax credit idea. We came out with, looking at these programs and actually providing some infrastructure for our local workforce investment boards to actually put these plans in place to help achieve their strategies. And if I didn't mention it, youth employment is one of the major focuses that the State Workforce Investment Board picked, as because they're required to pick some priorities, according to the federal law as well. And that was one of them that they picked. And I think it is one of the right ones to pick, because we need to get our workforce participating, because our economy needs it, our businesses need it, and we didn't find that lowering the wage was going to solve that problem.
Interesting. Thank you, Representative Holvey, very much. Representative Lively.
Representative Holvey. So first, I would just like to compliment Paul for the work he did on this, because it, in the descriptions, and I've talked to you about this before, the thoroughness of what you went through the analysis, I think, is very important to this conversation. So I appreciate that, because we've had some conversations in the past about this issue, and so to me that's vitally important. And I also appreciate the focus coming out about youth and some of those programs and where we could make some more investments to make them do. So just one of the clarifying, I know you serve on the state board, this definition of youth. So help me understand again, because people are all over the place. So what is the definition of youth that you're using or others are using in this conversation?
Well, that's a really good question. let me say that there are different definitions depending on what program you're looking at and how they were put together statutorily, for one. Right now, generally, we're thinking of youth, up to age 24.
That's what I thought.
That's, I guess the general consensus. That's what the federal government through WIOA looks at as well for their programs. And so it seems natural to do that. But having said that, we do see some different applications for youth at different ages. For example, the NFIB proposal on the tax credit, on the withholding for income tax, is actually not staggered, but it's sort of stepped, where the percentage of the credit for the younger folks will then, I believe it was larger and then get smaller as youth get to an age. I think it was 16 to 18, and then 18 to 21, and then 21 to 24, or something like that. So there was like three different, three or four. Is that right, Anthony?
More or less.
Pretty close.
Sure.
I don't have the numbers in front of me, my memory, because I'm getting old just like Representative Esquivel.
He had to do that.
it just depends on what program you're looking at, what it's designed to do, and what its statutory direction is, if there is one.
Sure. Thank you. Other questions? Representative Holvey, you know, oh, I'm sorry, please go ahead, Representative Escobar.
I think you brought up a great point, Paul, in the aspect that, you know, we're working with the at-risk youth. What about the 95%, 98% rest of the youth? And we do the same things kind of in education. We worry about the ones that are lagging behind. But what about the tag kids? You know, we don't put much money in the tag. And that's a shame because those, you know, we need to address the whole as a whole, and that's what you're getting at. And I agree 100%, and I think that's a great point.
Interesting. The observation I was going to share, Representative, is that one of my constituents contacted me, and they were interested in the whole topic of parents being able to employ their children, and that that parents who do employ their children are exempt from child labor laws. And the question they presented is, what about hiring your grandchildren? And the answer to that is that that there is no such exemption. Now, these are all federal requirements that we don't have the ability to address here. But I just found that a fascinating commentary on youth employment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think those problems are totally unique to the federal government. I'm sure we have some of those same issues in our state statutes. But oftentimes, you know, we're trying to align ourselves so we're don't come in conflict for with their regulations. You know, I'm not an expert in that field, but just osmosis, I guess.
So, other questions for the representative? I don't want to keep him too long because he'll expect Representative Smith or myself to come and give an equally detailed presentation to his committee and answer equally difficult questions. So, Representative, we thank you for your good work and we thank you for coming here and giving us an overview.
Yes, I look forward to your presentation.
I do as well.
How we can closely align our agendas.
I can't wait to hear what I have to say. Thank you again. Members of the committee, we are not scheduled to gather again until December Ledge Days. Ms. Nordland, any insights?
I think that Representative Smith and Representative Gomberg both wanted to ask for your input if you had ideas for committee bills. Is that mm-hmm. correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Just a reminder for everyone that Monday is the deadline to put in your requests for counsel if you want the draft returned in time to pre-session file. If you want it guaranteed in time to pre-session file, you can still put draft requests in after Monday, but there's no guarantee you'll get them back in time.
Does that include committee bills?
That includes committee bills.
Okay.
And so we'll be working on our agenda for the December meeting. If there's some things that you think that we just didn't quite get to, that a glaring omission in the in our exhaustive study of the challenges facing small businesses, let the good co-chair or I know, and we'll take a look at what we can do during our December schedule. Mm-hmm. Anything else for the good of the order? In that case, I will go ahead and adjourn this informational meeting.